Okay, so Paul Tonko, not such good news for the Democrats lately. Both Mayor de Blasio in New York, his administration has come under fire, inspired by the FBI and Preet Bharara. And the governor of New York, one of his top aides, Mr. Prococo, who he described as his father's third child, who his father really liked the most, are under fire for having done potentially illegal things. Subpoenas have been issued in both cases. Is this a Democratic thing, or is this something that, you know, all politicians have to watch out for any greedy tendency that they may harbor?
Well, there are those who suggest that this kind of business has always been going on in the arena, but we live in a day and age where, you know, scrutiny of these particular issues is real. And that we live in that glass bowl and need to act accordingly. And so the checks and balances that are available, especially with technology and with the fervor to, you know, make certain things are as accountable as possible, is real. And so these allegations, whether they're substantiated or not, are a cloud that comes that we need to deal with. And again, it should remind us that while we may not be able to legislate personal behavior, the ethical response when you raise your hand and take that oath of office needs to accompany you throughout the journey.
Now, Paul Tonko, you're a very smart guy and you're a very ethical man, and I know that. But you have to worry all the time. Some guy's going to walk into your office and make an indecent, you know, sort of proposal about money, or you do this, I'll do that. What would you do if that happened? If you're sitting in your office, the guy comes in, makes an offer like that, would you pick up the phone and call the FBI right in front of him, or what would you do?
I think you lay out to that individual just how you conduct yourself and what the ethics guidelines are of, in this case, the House of Representatives. We do that routinely. You know, people may not even do it with malice. They may just come in and want to be kind or supportive. And we always tell them there are limits that guide us. There are ethical situations that are reviewed by the House routinely. And we reach to the House all the time. If we do get something that may be gray in the area, we reach out to the ethics panel in the House and say, hey, this is what someone has proposed. Guide us here. And many times we have to tell people we cannot accept. But if someone is coming in maliciously to, you know, carry themselves for a favor or to, you know, put some sort of gift your way, again, you know, just having learned from other people's experience, that should be less than enough. And it surprises me that oftentimes there's a repeat out there and you just wonder what people were thinking.
There is a ban on outside income, a huge ban in the House of Representatives that you're allowed to make a little bit, but not very much.
Right. And, you know, I think some of those reforms are coming forward. I think that, you know, what we need to have is to make certain that there's an environment there with its guidelines and its restrictions that enables, you know, people of modest means to be able to run for office. Because what bothers me is we'll see this factor of a self-funder these days, which is very popular. And that bothers me because the House should reflect, in large measure, the great many of us, working families, middle-income people who, you know, roll up their sleeves, make it work month to month, and put a little aside for raising a family and maintaining a household and putting some savings aside for future endeavors. When you have that order of individual, I think you're then growing the best response in the House. And, you know, we're the people's House, and we should maintain that culture.
Well, you work with people who, some of whom are multimillionaires. You're not. I happen to know that. I've investigated you.
Far from it, we should say.
So it doesn't seem fair that, you know, some guy walks in there who is married to money or has money. They can do anything they want, where everybody else has to be very scrupulous.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, again, keeping the process open to everyone is the fair thing. And to be frank, there have been people like President Franklin Roosevelt who came from a lot of money, but through his experiences at Cold Springs, Georgia, when he was going for polio treatments, got to see poverty 8 people living in a one-room shack. That is not America, is what I'm certain he felt and believed, and drove a number of progressive ideas. So it's the character of the individual. They may come from very wealthy backgrounds, but it's when we cultivate this effort, when we go out there and just absolutely look for that self-funder status, and when we restrict the opportunity of people of modest means to enter in, you know, want that balance out there that provides a good ethical outcome, but at the same time makes it very possible and available for people of modest means to run for office.
Now, you're not going to like what I have to say now. I know.
Well,
that.
This would probably be the first time.
Yeah, right. But, you know, we have this cesspool known as the New York State Legislature. Or you served there for a while.
Yes.
You had to get out.
And I would love your listeners to know you're smiling as you're asking this question.
Right.
I'm just trying to provoke.
I'm trying to provoke you.
Oh, thank you.
Don't you see? So my question is, the rules for the House about outside income, which are eminently sensible to me, I have a column that'll appear in the Troy newspaper about that very thing right now, how good it is to have this set of rules in the House. They should be applied to the New York State Legislature too, but they just won't seem to be able to get off the dime and do it. Is that wrong?
Well, I think that, you know, given the many instances that have come to the forefront, there should be a serious review of what those guidelines are. And, you know, if these situations have still been coming to the, you know, to the forefront, let's take action and let's structure it so that there's every effort being made to have better outcomes.
And very quickly, I want to know about your horse legislation. You have
sure.
a horse safety bill coming up.
Right, an Integrity
minutes.
Act.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Integrity Act for the horse racing industry is basically putting a panel together that is USADA in part and in various angles perspective.
What's USADA again?
The group that dealt with the Olympians when they were doing their review of drug-induced.
Yes, yes.
The USADA effort is part of the equation here for the Integrity Act for the horse racing industry, where we take their track record, their ability to develop protocol for testing and rules and proceedings and penalties, and merge them, in a sense, on this panel with different perspectives from the horse racing industry, the owner perspective, jockey perspective, and the like, trainer, bringing them together in developing the situations that guide the use of various substances in the horse racing industry, and making certain that front and center, epicenter of all this focus is the equine athlete. Because, you know, obviously the horse doesn't determine whether or not it's going to take drugs. And, you know, I think the public out there, the fans, are very discerning. And it is important for us to clean up that situation and to not be having horses race at any cost. If they're unfit for racing that day, we ought to not mask that with drugs that are administered. So, you know, it's in a way an opportunity or the demands, responsibilities of the industry to regulate themselves.
It's always great to talk to our friend Paul Tonko. And I do mean that when I say friend, who is here with us today, comes into the studio, gets wet, umbrella, always does his work. I'll bet as a kid you always did your homework, Paul.
I did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if they told you to bring a diorama, you did.
I try to always behave.